Thank you very much indeed, Donald. We'll go over to St. Eugene's Cathedral now, where I believe that there's confirmation of Bishop Niall Cole returning to County Donegal.
To be Bishop of Raphoe.
So, just literally the formal announcement of Bishop Niall Cole being appointed. He was, that appointment was confirmed by Pope Leo this morning.
Bishop Cole is well known to us. Hailing from St. Johnston, he was ordained a priest of this diocese in 1988. After completing his licentiate in dogmatic theology at the Gregorian University in Rome, he was appointed chaplain to St. Eunan's College. Thereafter, he was engaged in teaching theology at Carlo College before returning to Rome to complete his doctorate in sacred theology in the field of Christology, once more from the Gregorian University. He returned to the diocese to minister in Dunloe, both as curate and as chaplain to Pobolskal na Rossan. In 2001, he was appointed Professor of Religious Studies and Religious Education at St. Mary's University College, Belfast. Returning to full-time parish ministry, he was appointed Parish Priest of Ballintra in 2020, and thereafter Parish Priest of Donegal Town in 2021, before his appointment on the 28th of October 2022 as Bishop of Ossory, with its seat in the city of Kilkenny. Bishop Cole comes to us with a distinguished ministry in teaching and accompanying the young, ministering in the parishes of our diocese, engaging in the fields of theology, academics, and ecumenical dialogue. His commitment to and vision for Catholic education allow him to speak constructively to the changing landscape of education in our own country, while he offers a prophetic word of reflection both to the community of believers and to secular society concerning the life of faith and the health of our wider community. I am also conscious that at a personal level, Bishop Niall's return to Donegal will be a matter of great consolation to his mother Kathleen and to his immediate and extended family. Kathleen, you are most welcome, and we extend also to you our heartfelt congratulations, and we remember your late husband Willie. May he rest in peace. Bishop Cole, you represent the most distinguished achievements of this presbyterate of Raphoe. We are proud of your committed and intelligent ministry, and now by the grace of God and the favour of the Apostolic See, of having you as our bishop.
We're just taking some coverage from St. Eunan's Cathedral. You're hearing the voice there of Father Kevin Gillespie as he formally welcomes Bishop Niall Cole as Bishop of Raphoe. We can now listen to the new Bishop from Raphoe live from St. Eunan's Cathedral.
Dear people, religious and priests of the Diocese of Raphoe, it is with deep gratitude that I return home to serve as Bishop of Raphoe. As Father Kevin just said, the diocese where I was born, baptized and ordained to the priesthood. To be called back to the place and people who first formed my faith is both humbling and deeply moving. From my earliest days, the faith and love I experienced in my family home in St. Johnston have shaped every step of my journey. I think today with special affection of my mother Kathleen, whose love and deep faith continues to be a source of strength and encouragement, and of my late father Willie, whose example of quiet integrity, humour and trust in God left a mark that remains with me always. I am blessed also by the constant love and support of my sisters, my brother, my wider family, and many friends, whose loyalty and kindness have accompanied me throughout every step of life and ministry. To return to Rafoe, the diocese that first formed me, is both humbling and profoundly moving. It was here that I first learned what faith looks like when it is lived day by day in families, in schools, in parishes, and in the generous witness of so many lay faithful, priests and religious. I wish to acknowledge with heartfelt gratitude my predecessors who have shaped this diocese with faith and dedication. Most recently, Bishop Alan McGuckian, whose energy and selfless spirit of service have left its mark. And before him, Bishop Philip Boyce, here present, whose years of prayerful service and gentleness of spirit are still warmly remembered. I also remember with gratitude the late Bishop Seamus Hegarty and Bishop Anthony McFeely, whose faithful leadership and steady dedication helped to shape the life of this diocese in their time. I want too to acknowledge Monsignor Kevin Gillespie, who has so ably and faithfully served as diocesan administrator since Bishop McGuckian's transfer to Down and Connor almost 2 years ago. He has carried that responsibility with steadiness, discretion, and generosity, ensuring that the pastoral and spiritual life of the diocese has continued without interruption. For the past 3 years, I have had the privilege of serving as Bishop of Ossory. The priests, religious, and people of that diocese welcomed me with warmth and trust, and I have learned much from their faith, their generosity, and their resilience in facing the challenges of our time. Of course, my knowledge of hurling tested their patience there. I leave Ossory with deep affection and gratitude, and with friendships that I will always treasure. As I return now to Rafoe, I do so as one who was ordained a priest of this diocese 37 years ago on this very ground in this sanctuary. I carry with me immense respect for the priests of Rafoe, for their faithfulness, their pastoral care, their humour, and their dedication to the people they serve. I am also deeply grateful to the parishes where I was privileged to minister in earlier years. The people of those parishes taught me the meaning of priesthood and discipleship, not in theory, but through their faith, kindness, and friendship.
And that was the newly appointed Bishop of Rafoe, Bishop Niall Cole. He returns to Donegal, of course, and we'll get more reaction to this from St. Eunan's Cathedral in a moment, but we do have to take a quick break. Crossing over to our journalist from the newsroom, Donna Marie Doherty. Good morning to you, Donna Marie. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, Fred. Can you hear me okay there?
Yes, loud and clear. We'll just crack straight on. So we've just been taking some of the live feed from St. Eunan's Cathedral. We were expecting a new bishop, but this seemed to happen quite quickly.
Mm-hmm. It has. And I have to say, there's quite the crowd here. A lot of local schools have come in to see the new bishop, Cole, step in now to his new role. And you can see we had a few latecomers just as we were waiting to get chatting to you there. And it was the same feeling every time. A lot of people very excited to see a local man from the diocese now to head the way as bishop. As we know, Bishop Cole is a Rafoe man. And he's the eldest of four children. So, you know, he'll be able to bring that sense of family and belonging that was crucial to the role. And people here, the locals here, are very excited about it.
Yes, and you could hear from his comments that he enjoyed his previous 3 years as Bishop of Ossory, but a very welcome return home as well. This is where, on the very altar he stands now, is where I believe he was ordained, and it's a full circle moment.
Oh, yes. And that is the thing, you know, there is nothing like coming home, and I suppose whenever you enter the priesthood, it is sort of part and parcel. You don't quite know where you're going to end up, so to be able to take on such an honour of being bishop for your own community, I doubt is there be nothing that really would compare to it. And you just, he was speaking there about how the rugged landscape of Donegal shaped him and how he wants to bring this in now to his new position.
Yes, and he also was full of praise of Father Kevin Gillespie, who has stood in over the last number of years and by all accounts has done a very good job in that. But there was some question marks about whether or not, as part of a rationalisation, Ruffo would get another bishop. But today confirms that, so that's good news for Catholics.
It certainly is. It certainly is. And there is always, you know, I feel like there's, in more recent years, been growing question marks over the priesthood and, you know, numbers that are becoming available for that. So days like today is good for people who practice. It's a good reassurance that, you know, the faith is still alive and that, you know, it's great that we have such availability that people can come back to their home parishes.
All right, brilliant stuff. Thanks so much, Donna Marie. Donna Marie will be capturing the audio and the visuals of all of that to cover it on our news bulletins a little later on. But just as a nice convenience of timing, we were able to bring you that announcement of Bishop Niall Cole's appointment, but also his first comments as the newly appointed Bishop of Ruffo. And he was appointed by, of course, the Pope. Because that's how it's all done, isn't it? Pope Leo this morning appointed him, and then you heard him on the radio a couple of moments later. Okay, we're going to be joined in studio by our next guest after these. And I'm joined in studio now by a gentleman who I've spoken to in the past, and I'm very pleased to have in front of me today. It's Terry Doherty. Terry, thank you so much for calling in.
Greg, thank you so much for having me on your show.
Yes,
I'm still coming down from the dizzy heights of yesterday.
I can imagine. And we'll talk through that, but I just don't want to presume that everybody knows the family story, if that's okay. And I know you spoke to us in great detail some time ago about your brother John Doherty. He was a Royal Ulster Constabulary Detective Constable, and talk us through, you know, those horrible events of the 28th of October 1973. So a little bit about your brother and what happened to him.
Well, if I just could go back 57 years ago, Greg.
Okay.
When John left our humble abode in rural Donegal and went to serve with the London Metropolitan Police, then transferred to Ulster Constabulary, Royal Ulster Constabulary. And I would say that there's not too many police officers have served with both forces.
No, I'd
imagine. And that's
so,
that's
yeah,
his claim to fame. And on Sunday the 20th of October, he visited our widowed mother and was ambushed by terrorists and died as a result of serious injuries.
What do you know about that in terms of, it wasn't necessarily a scheduled visit? Did you ever learn as to how it was known he would be there at that time?
Well, there was one particular person that never left our road. Mm. And I actually know his nickname.
Well, we'll not mention it if you don't mind, but I understand where you're coming from.
Yeah, and he was one of the chief instigators. And we had known him for many years.
Mm.
And he had relatives living locally to us, but he didn't visit the relatives. It was just to see if John's car was in the yard at our home.
So effectively, if it was being scouted, I imagine that it must have been the case that as soon as his vehicle is spotted, there's a plan, and that plan would be...
Yeah, it was a very distinctive red Capri, Ford Capri,
right.
Beautiful. In those days, the Capri had the vinyl roof.
Yeah.
And John loved his cars. And again, I received an invitation on the 23rd of October to attend a presentation in Windsor Castle, which was a great honour.
Now, this was Britain's King Charles presenting Elizabeth emblems to the next of kin of former police officers and other public servants who died in the line of duty. Was there any sort of rumblings over the years that such an invitation would be given to your family?
No, you applied to the investiture office in Windsor Castle.
Okay.
And yeah, and you received the invitation, and that from the application to the invitation was probably in the region of about 4 months. And as you can understand, to arrange these presentations, it takes quite a bit of organisation. And when we gathered there in the castle yesterday with other families, other bereaved families, and there were many there that I met at previous remembrance service and functions, and there's a great friendship built up within the police family. And John will never be forgotten.
Is that why it was important for you to pursue this, so that he would never be forgotten? He would never be forgotten by family, but yeah. This means that his service will formally never be forgotten.
That is correct, yeah. John's name will never be forgotten. And on Sunday next will be another remembrance service in Omagh, where John will be honoured and remembered with his fallen colleagues from the Tyrone and Omagh district. And we will be attending that as well. With family members. And the number there yesterday, you're allowed to take one other person, and will they accompany me to the castle? And when we gathered in the castle, there was great anticipation as to who would be doing the presentation. And there were some names of members of the royal family mentioned. But then word filtered through that it was going to be His Majesty the King. And what an honour to be there. And when John's name was announced within the walls of the castle, it was just very emotional. And when the king did approach us to do the presentation, you felt so relaxed.
So he physically actually makes the presentation to you?
He does, yeah.
Right, okay.
And he also informed me that he had visited Mullaghmore, where his favourite uncle was murdered by terrorists, Lord Louis Mountbatten. And Lord Louis Mountbatten was the king's favourite uncle, although he was Prince Charles in those years. And very, very, very easy to talk to and relaxed.
So he personalised the conversation. It wasn't just, oh, there you are.
Oh.
Because it's not, I don't know, how long ago was it since he visited Donegal as well? He visited, I think it as was at the same time, he did a tour of Donegal Town and what have you. I was down at that for Highland at the time. It was a big deal, obviously.
Yeah, it was a great honour to be there. And he spent so much time, it was no rushed thing, he spent so much time actually talking to the people.
How many of the Elizabeth emblems were handed out on the day?
Well, there was approximately 30 recipients there yesterday.
Right, okay. Yeah. So it's not a huge number, so it afforded him time then.
Well, he had a previous investiture ceremony in another part of the castle.
Uh-huh.
So again, probably that was why it was limited to numbers. And there'll be many more will receive the same honour as we received yesterday.
Yeah.
And if I just could go back to 2023.
Mm-hmm.
And what followed the memorial service in the cemetery in Castlefin.
Can you remind listeners of that, if you don't mind, Terry, because that is the reason we had the conversation with you the last time.
On the 20th of October 2023, there was a remembrance service held in the cemetery in Castlefin, and a memorial stone with John's name was placed on the grave along with a poppy wreath. And the clergy were there to represent both sides of the community. And approximately a week after it, the stone was stolen and vandalised along with a poppy wreath and propaganda. And if those spineless individuals that I refer to thought that they were promoting their propaganda, it worked in reverse, because the Doherty family handed over the memorial stone to Kenny Donaldson, who works with SEF. SEF is the Southeast Fermanagh Foundation, who represent all victims of the Troubles. And a group of ladies within the group make beautiful quilts, and all victims' names and details are added to the group, the quilts, but no victim name will be added to the quilt without the family's permission. And there's massive, the beautiful quilts. And now Kenny Donaldson has travelled the country with the vandalised memorial stone and the quilts. And I'm glad to say John is also on one of those quilts. Now, the number of people that have seen the vandalised stone numerous. And the last time I spoke with Kenny, he told me that he had taken the stone into a convent in Dublin. So it brought John more into the limelight, if that's the proper word, than the spineless individuals that actually vandalised the stone with their propaganda.
Yeah, indeed. Can I have a look at that Elizabeth emblem? I might show the listeners that are watching, if you don't mind. Do you mind if I handle it? Or
oh,
no, are you sure? Okay, there you go. Because I do know it's of incredible significance to you. So that is it. That's going to take pride of place then, no doubt whatsoever. Yeah. Okay.
What we have here now, Greg, is priceless. And Willie won't live forever, and this will be handed down, and the younger generation will carry the baton or the torch, because John's name will be illuminated.
Yeah.
And like the saying goes, even the darkest night cannot extinguish the light of a single candle. And the famous words, strong towers may decay, but a good name never fades away. So
yeah, it's a remarkable... what is this meaning to you? We talked, sometimes when, say for instance there's an incident and someone's found responsible and people talk of closure or what have you, obviously Terry, you've expressed the emotion of the fact that this enshrines your brother John into history and that he'll never be forgotten.
Yeah.
Is there a meaning beyond that? That's a huge meaning, don't get me wrong, but is there a meaning beyond that that has you so full of joy with almost a perpetual smile on your face?
Well, yesterday was the crowning glory. That's the proper words, the crowning glory, when His Majesty stepped forward to present me with the emblem to honour John. A day never to be forgotten. I'll take that day to my grave with me. And if I could mention a wonderful lady who has befriended the family recently and who invited me to the Guildhall in Derry, London area last Friday to meet bereaved families and talk with them. And that lady is the Reverend Marlene Skuse. And Marlene Skuse is the Methodist minister in the church in Railway Street in Strabane, a wonderful lady. Yeah.
Okay, thanks Terry for calling in. Appreciate it.
And my pleasure.
I'm glad this has brought you so much joy, and it was such a high for you yesterday, and we appreciate you coming in so soon after.
Thank you very much, Greg. Thank you for having me on your show.
Terry Doherty there. When we're over in London for the London Vintage Show, we got a chat with Seamus Carr, and we were talking about his achievements and his life in Donegal and all that, which was great, but I wanted to catch up with him again because he's formally been announced as the Donegal London Person of the Year. Good morning, Seamus.
Good morning, Greg.
How are you feeling?
I'm feeling not too bad. Apologies, I've got a touch of a cold at the moment. I'm just trying to shake it off. But overall,
everyone in Donegal has it at the moment, Seamus. Everyone's got sore ears, sore throats, coughs, splutters. It's just going around. The big night now is the Hilton Hotel Wembley on Saturday, the 22nd of November, where you're going to receive the honour of Donegal London Person of the Year from the Association's annual dinner dance. Are you looking forward to it, Seamus?
Yeah, I'm especially looking forward to it, all right. Yes, it's getting exciting now because we're coming close to the time, and family and friends coming over from Ireland, different parts, and yes, looking forward to it, all right.
My invitation yet to come in for some reason, I don't know. I go to London every year, but nope, Seamus, nothing yet. It's probably too late, but anyway, not from you, I mean from the Association. Come here, till I ask you. Come here.
Yes.
You've done really well for yourself, and you have through your own life, and you were always a grafter, weren't you? And you started off in trades, really, Seamus.
I did, yes. I did. I started off in trades and went to school with my twin brother to Fallcarragh College after leaving school and then an Erie National School. I was in Carrick first, but Dad moved us all up to, he was his teacher. Then he moved us, a headmaster, in then an Erie National School. And he took the five of us up to keep it, to continue to run a two-teacher school in then an Erie. And from there, my twin brother and I, Padraig, went to Falkara College, but I didn't particularly get on that well there. And after 3 years, I left and went to Sligo, to the Regional College in Sligo, where I did mechanical work and enjoyed that. And in the meantime, then I went, usually playing football and stuff like that there, but overall, I went from there then to with the Donegal team for a short period of time, and then I headed over to London then afterwards, because my dad, unfortunately, we were 15, and unfortunately he got a stroke at 15 and never spoke again. And Mum looked after him for 8 years, and after that there then he passed away, and unfortunately Mum only lived 18 months after that. And
I just want to go back to your Donegal career, sorry, because you brushed over it there. I just want to mention that you played for Donegal in 79 and got all the way to the Ulster final. Unfortunately that wasn't United, but you brushed over that a little bit, so to give your dues. So following the illness and your dedication of your mum and her sad passing, was that sort of like a catalyst for maybe a change of scenery, and what drew you to London?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I just got tired of doing mechanical work, and I enjoyed it all right for a while. But then I got a phone call. I met a fella called Seamus Mohan in Donegal town, and he said, "I heard you're thinking of coming over." And I says, "Possibly, yeah." And then he put me in contact with a guy from Clare called Franklin, who was starting a big job, Stoke Mandeville Hospital, and for. Even Brendan Vaughan was there, along with a good number of Donegal players who came over. Four or five of us came over, and we started working there. And it just took off from that there, really. Mm. I met up with Tim Kelly, who had a flat in Kilburn, or Hampstead, Messina Avenue. And he was very accommodating, as always. And I stayed in that flat with Tim and Seamus for a period of time.
Which is quite a remarkable little room, that, given the success that come from it. Obviously, you know, Tim Kelly has gone on to be hugely successful, as have you. The third gentleman I'm not familiar with, and how things fared for him. But, I mean, that was some flat. It's produced some success, hasn't it, Seamus?
Well, it's... has a bit of history behind it, all right. That's true. Yes, indeed.
The flat of dreams, we'll call it, will we?
Yeah.
We're in the same timeline where you met your beautiful wife, Breed, as well. Did you meet her in London? I know she was working in Great Ormond Street in London, caring for sick children. Did you meet her in London, or did you reconnect in London, or what?
No, Breed Hegarty, as her maiden name was, she was from Malinmore, Glencullum Kill, and she trained in the matter in Dublin, and I met her, got to know her very well around 1978, 79, when in Donegal, when we were playing football and stuff like that there, and then I moved over to London first, and then she got a job in Great Ormond Street then, and she arrived over, and she became a clinical nurse, clinical nurse specialist in Great Ormond Street Child's Hospital then. And
you and Breed had a stint then in New York, and it was just a stint. What brought you over there, and I suppose what brought you back so quickly?
Well, it's just the fact that before she became a clinical nurse specialist in the Great Ormond Street, she was working in Great Ormond. She had a different job in the hospital. And in the meantime, I knew there was a few guys over in New York, and I wanted to go over to see what it was like. And so I... headed off myself the first year I was there, and then she came out for the second year or so, and in the meantime we had a great time there, met a lot of friends, a lot from Donegal, from all over Ireland really, in a sense, and they're still great friends to us today. And went from there then. Great Ormond Street rang Breed to ask her if she'd come back and have a there's a new job in the ward in Great Ormond Street, and she said, yes, she'd like to go back. So that's really why we came back earlier than we expected to come back, you know. And but I think we made the right decision, really, at that particular time. So we just came back, and we raised three children then, Christina, Anna and Tom, here in London, you know. And they're great children, obviously, they're big now and a whole lot, but thank God everything was going so well from there anyway.
Now, very sadly, if we fast forward to 2011, you lost your wife, Breed, to ovarian cancer. And unfortunately, efforts to detect it were missed on two occasions before it was caught. And I know in your conversations with Breed, firstly, like we all would, she wanted you to make sure the kids were well looked after, and you fulfilled that commitment to her. But I know she also pressed on you the importance of, when you had an opportunity, highlighting ovarian cancer. So she was incredibly thoughtful in that period, obviously thinking on her family, but also too, if there were any opportunities to reach other women, conversation, that you were to try and do that for her.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, she was all right. That's the two things she asked me to do: look after the children and highlight ovarian cancer. And Rosemary, her sister, was behind us all the way, and her and Mike and the family. And and that's what we started doing. We started doing some fundraising, and I have to say that we got remarkable support from all parts of Donegal, London, and I could start with Chicago Gales Club, Donegal Association, Donegal Golf Society, Finn Valley Athletic Club, Donegal Gaelic Association, Cope Park, Harvey's Point, as well as even Hegarty's and Carrick and the bar in Carrick there. And they just a fantastic amount of money we raised, and Cancer Cork in Cork, Cancer Research in Cork, were very, very, very helpful in the whole way straight through, with Dr. Sharon McKenna and a few others there, you know. And it went very well up to now, anyway. And I'm just continuing to do that now at the moment. And actually, in fact, there's another angle to it now because of this is a call coming through, but there's no problem. In the meantime, 2 years after Breed's passed away, we were doing a job down at Heathrow Airport, and the project manager on the job asked us all to come up to a room, and I said, well, what do you want to do? He says, I want to check you guys for drinking drugs. And I says, you're wasting your time. And he says, no, I have to check you all. And so happened that I was the only one he called back to say that I better go to the doctor, I have a problem. And it turned out that I had well advanced prostate cancer. I was one of those people who did not have any symptoms of any description. So I went to the hospital in Chelsea, Westminster, where my good friend Michael Deneen, consultant neurologist there, and he said, you're very lucky, he's touching a vital organ. So and I says, I don't want to know anymore, do whatever you have to do. And lucky enough, so far I was down with him yesterday, actual fact, getting my blood tested every 6 months now for the rest of my life. But so far so good, it's coming back very, very low, my numbers. So if anybody's listening there to me that knows me, I would like them to think, if you're over 50 years of age, to go and have a PSA blood test. Mm. And just go and have one anyway, and at least they know how you're fixed. Mm. It gives you the comfort of knowing that you're okay. But unfortunately, there'll be some who will not be okay, but the sooner they get it, the better.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's one of the I would like to make anyway, Greg, you know?
Yeah, and I think obviously, you know, throughout your life and career, you've never forgotten your roots to Donegal. I know you, like so many others, Tim Kelly and ETC, never forget where they came from, and support charities or send money back when they can as well. So listen, we wish you the very best for the Hilton Hotel Wembley on Saturday, the 22nd of November. I'm sure it's going to be a lovely night, Seamus.
Hopefully. I'm disappointed you're not coming, Greg.
Well, you could get Tim to pick me up at that airport in Fermanagh. I don't know. Maybe Highland was invited and I haven't been invited. I don't know, Seamus. I was going to be there to have a Guinness with you, but it looks like I'll be watching from afar.
I would look forward to having you there. But before I go, if I'm leaving now, I would really like to thank the Donegal Association here in London and also everybody in the committee there that have been doing tremendous work over the years. I'd just like to add another thing to it, is I didn't know it until very recently that the first Donegal Man of the Year was done in Dublin, and the person to receive it was Father McDyer, who I used to clerk mass for. So it's unbelievable that Father McDyer was a great man, and so nicely. I know it's in London, that started in Dublin, but Tony McFadden and his committee then, fair play to them, they continued it now in London. So it's a lovely, and I'm very humble and to be offered this award, you know, well on behalf of the family and everybody else.
Well deserved.
You know?
And Wee Rosa, Bridget, we didn't get a mention for Wee Rosa yet, I don't think.
My granddaughter.
We'll give Wee Rosa, Bridget a shout out as well, who's also carrying the memory of her granny as well, too, which is lovely.
Yeah.
Best wishes to you, Seamus. Best wishes to all the family.
Greg, thank you very, very much, and best wishes to you all.
Look after yourself.
Thank you.
Take care, Seamus. Seamus Carr there. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text. And it's been a day of recognising people who are being remembered or who have been achieved. And some of it's coincidental that it all happens on the same day. And our guests, Rachel and Eunan, very popular from Mace. Can you please say a congratulations and thank you to Rachel and Eunan from all the ladies in St Mary's Hall Convoy. Kay and Eamon Doherty want to wish Eunan and Rachel well. Congratulations, folks, from the Flood family in Ardraw, Columbkill, Letterkenny. Congratulations, Eunan and Rachel. The reason I go in there is because of the top-ups. P.S. Eunan has an All-Ireland medal too from 1982. Thanks, John, for that. Yeah, the top-ups. It's the simple things that can mean so much. Kay and Eamon Doherty want to wish Eamon and Rachel well, and I've read that one as well. That's a double up there. Listen, that's fantastic. Loads of lovely wishes, good wishes coming in for Seamus as well. Seamus Carr, another Carrick man, doing very well for himself and has for years over in London Town. Right, we'll be back with more after we take a quick break. We're joined on the programme by Councillor Fionnán Bradley. Good morning, Fionnán, how are you getting on?
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to all your listeners.
It is good to have you with us. Right, the Taoiseach has once more committed to the restoration of town councils. I didn't hear that. So tell us, what has he committed to and when?
Well, the Taoiseach was answering a question in the Dáil Saver yesterday morning from Tipperary TD Seamus Healy in relation to town councils and their restoration. And in fairness to the Taoiseach, he was opposed to their abolition back in 2014. And really, since that time, he has consistently called for their restoration. I suppose we're nearer to that possibility than ever now with the establishment at the start of this year of the Local Democracy Task Force. So that comprises councillors and civil servants and LAMA and the ALG. They would all have representation on that. That body is due to report to the Minister for Housing and Local Government, as far as I'm aware, by February of 2026. And I would be very, very hopeful indeed that within their report they will recommend the re-establishment of town councils.
The re-establishment of the town councils as we know them, like, you know, Bundoran, Ballyshannon, you know, Buncrana. But there are arguments now for a Dunloe Parish Council or a Donegal Town Parish Council or a Carndonna Parish Council. You know, I mean, at this point, is it a restoration of the councils that once existed? Surely the demographics and clientele in Letterkenny, sorry, I didn't mention Letterkenny. Surely the demographics and what have you means that it's not just a case of putting back in what was there once there, but to see where the need's greatest?
Oh, absolutely, Greg. And in fairness, I don't honestly think anybody is calling for that. There are certain towns that had a town council for historical reasons, but they had very, very small populations. And other towns never had one, such as Swords, for example, in North County Dublin. But I mean, it's plain, in my opinion, to be seen that since their abolition, most towns that did have them are doing less well off. I mean, if you take the politics out of it and look at it mathematically, Bunpanna used to have between 10 and 11 councillors representing it. It had 9 town councillors, and it usually had 1 or 2 or sometimes 3 county councillors in Lifford. Now Bunpanna has 3 councillors representing it. That's at the municipal district and at county council level. So it's very obvious that when you have 10, 11 or 12 voices all speaking maybe for the same thing, that a town the size of Bunpanna or Letterkenny or your bigger population centres, they will get their fair share of the pie then. But also, I might add, it would free up resources at a county level for the smaller towns, the smaller villages and the rural areas to get the funding and the development they also need, but that maybe hasn't been called for as loudly because of the municipal district structure where most of the services end up being focused on the bigger towns and villages.
Yeah, okay. It just would be very interested. I think we need to examine where they go, personally speaking. I mean, say, for instance, to look at Ballyshannon, I'm not saying it doesn't need its own town council, but I think that's a very different town post-bypass in terms of population. You know, say, for instance, a Donegal town council, for me personally, if you were to pick one from both of those towns, for an example, would make more sense. I think the argument for Bunpanna to retain it and Letterkenny would be very strong. But there is, I think, potentially even a strong argument for one in the west of the county as well. Will this all be, as far as you're aware, and you've answered to this to some extent, on the table?
Oh, nothing is off the table, as far as I'm aware, Greg. I did read the terms of reference of the Local Democracy Task Force at the time it was set up. It was left wide open to them to make any recommendation or any decision they so wish. And ultimately, the final say will be with the minister and indeed with the government. I wouldn't be opposed to a new town council in any of the places that you mentioned. I really would advocate for them because I really do know the benefit of them when they were established, and as I've said, it's so plain to be seen now to the detriment of the areas that did have them, how they've slipped backwards since the abolition of their town councils.
Yeah. All right, listen, thanks very much indeed for your time. It is appreciated. That's Councillor Fionnán Bradley, who is a Fianna Fáil councillor in Inishowen as well. Have you any appetite to see the return of town councils? If so, would you like to see one in your area either returned or located to? Best wishes to Rachel and Eunan McIntyre from the Ladies of St. Mary's Hall Convoy. I think I read that one already. A late request here. Would it be possible to say a big happy birthday on Highland today for Michael McDade, Miltown Bunpanna, who is 80 today from his family? Of course it would. Happy birthday to you, Michael. Right, some other comments coming in. Greg, can you please clear up something for us? E-scooters, are they supposed to be in the path of the road? They are supposed to be on the road. They should not be on footpaths, and it is a €50 fine if the guard so wants, by the way. So that e-scooters are not permitted on footpaths. They're not permitted on any areas like pedestrianised areas. They must be on the road. If everyone used e-scooters on the bicycle lanes, it would get crowded and block each other like cars. I don't think we'll ever get to that point. I think if everyone in a car got onto a scooter and then tried to use a specific lane, it could be problematic, but no. Are these e-scooter people insured to operate a motorised vehicle? I think the government's losing out here. No, e-scooters are treated in that way the exact same as a push bike is. So it's not on the cards. Driving on the dual carriageway about a week ago, a Garda car came along with the siren, put 18 cars up on the footpath so they could get through. The footpath was empty. Wondered why Garda didn't mount the footpath instead of making all the cars mount the curb. Well, it's the emergency vehicle, and it's us that must get out of its way. I think I know the point you're making, but I mean, the logical, it doesn't matter if it's whatever it is, we need to get out of their way, don't we? The new housing plan, Delivering Homes, Building Communities, will aim to build 300,000 houses by 2030. 72,000 of these, will be social housing units. This is the fourth housing plan to be launched in 10 years. This is nothing more than a joke. We all know it will not be delivered. But as I say, I can be cynical and what have you, but I would love to see it delivered. And I like some of the terminology about getting addressing homelessness specifically, which is not just always simply providing a room or a house. Homelessness can be quite complex at times. There can be other issues going on, some co-issues that need to be addressed as well. But we shouldn't have people homeless in this country. We have the resources, we just need the will. So hopefully the government achieves that. Yes, it's true, reflooding, and yet the council ignores people's complaints for years. Special areas of conservation and salmon rivers are being polluted, but neither the council or Uisge Éireann will spend the money to repair these systems. On costs, Greg, I'm in the building industry. I'm always surprised at the lack of people in hardware stores in Donegal. This is because they're buying their needs in the north because they don't have to pay VAT on it. Then coming here and adding the VAT cost to the people they are working for. It's very unfair rip-off of people already struggling. There's been bits and bobs of work around me, either stuff that I've been doing or Aisling or others. And all of the materials I've seen have been sourced locally, either by myself or even on major development projects, the materials were sourced locally. So that's my experience. That doesn't mean your experience or your opinion's wrong. It's just not something I've come across. Right, I think that is where we have to leave it on the programme today. Caroline, where are we again tomorrow, just to make sure I say it? The Finn Valley College? Yeah, we're at Finn Valley College tomorrow. They're launching a new album. We're going to be doing our usual show, the Friday panel, etc. But we'll also be getting some music and poetry from staff and pupils, and looking forward to it. So tune in for that if you can, and why couldn't you? But from the studio today, we bid you adieu. Have a fantastic Thursday, everybody.